Welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am joined by this guy's really cool dude. He's so cool. In fact, I'm going to call him today Martin Polar Bear Willis.
Yes. Did I tell you that we had snow last night?
Oh, you did. I didn't even know that. I think I remote viewed that just now.
You must have. Yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful winter wonderland, but it's just too darn early, if you ask me.
Yeah, I knew it was cold. But isn't it, I mean, it's that time. It's already late November. It's almost Thanksgiving.
I know. It's just, we were so spoiled last year. Such a beautiful winter.
Really?
So, didn't see too much snow. I've become less of a fan of snow as time goes on, I guess.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I am like, deathly afraid of snow. I did set my trip to go back to Denver, and you know, when I left Denver, I thought I'd miss it, but I don't at all. It's like I just do not look forward to the ice and cold and the snow, and it makes me cringe just thinking about it here, sitting here in my flip-flops at the office here.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to put on shoes and socks.
Well, looking forward to February already when I have wake up to snow like this.
Oh, yeah.
Out there in Phoenix. Yeah.
Yeah, out here it's going to be beautiful. It'll be great because, you know, out here we are able to wear less clothing, which is more natural, like, you know, when we were out in the wild.
That's right.
You know, so we get to live more like our wild, primitive selves.
You caveman, you. Yes.
Yeah. All right, so my guest today is a friend to you and I, and this is Ryan Sprague, and really happy. His book is called Somewhere in the Skies, this new book that he got out. I'm happy to have him on the show again. I've had him on before, and I think I was one of the first people to have him on, but he really kind of came out, you know, into the UFO field with us here at Open Minds. He started writing for our magazine, and he's written for the website. And so he's always been our buddy, and so it's appropriate and exciting that his first lecture at a UFO conference will be at the UFO Congress. And I always like having people who I think are great do their first lectures at our conference, especially if I have faith in them. And I have the utmost faith in Ryan Sprague doing a great job. But, you know, we had Erica Lukes on the show not too long ago, and this won't be her first lecture, but she hasn't done this much, and I've heard some great feedback, luckily, from, I think, what was her first lecture. So, excited to have her doing a lecture, too. So, we go a little bit out on the limb, but with Ryan, I think it's a no-brainer. He's just, everybody loves him, and he's going to do a great job, so I'm just really excited about that.
Yeah, the guy has a huge personality. And it's Sprague, by the way. I know you're just teasing him, aren't you?
No. How do you know it's Sprague?
I don't think Sprague. It is. That's how you said that name.
He's always told me Sprague.
Okay, maybe he's I don't know. Maybe that's how his family pronounced that name.
Yeah.
I thought you were teasing him, actually.
No.
Oh,
like wow. Prague. Sprague like Prague is, I'm pretty sure, the way he's always told me.
Well, may I just stand corrected then?
Yeah, or I could be wrong, but since the show was pre-recorded, when I bring him on, I won't be able to ask him, but we'll have to ask him at some point.
Well, if you only had that darn time travel machine, you'd be able to.
But I've always said Sprague, and if I remember correct, he said it's like Prague.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
About that. Yeah. Well, in these parts here in Maine, they We have the Sprague Oil, and spelled exactly the same.
Huh.
So it's a big thing in Maine.
Well,
but how about that?
Yeah, who knows? They could pronounce it wrong. It's America. It's not like I say my name exactly like it's supposed to be. Can't even physically move my mouth to say Rojas, or I can't roll my R's.
Yeah.
So
Rojas.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. See? So it could be one of those things. But before we talk to Ryan, though, you and I always talk UFO news. In fact, that's what you're here for, not just to goof around, but to actually – talk some UFO news.
Well, work. Okay. Yes. All right. So this is an interesting image, and it was posted on November 16th. And a witness wonders if a video captured an alien. And if you look at this, it looks like a silhouette of, like you can almost even see like shadows where the eyes would be. It looks like a silhouette of a gray. I will tell you that. But I'll go into further, my thoughts about this, but it is a spooky looking image, and it was taken back on June 17th of this year, and it was during a video chat, and the lights were out, and here's the witness is saying, "My bathroom light was on, so I could see my computer," the witness stated. "That is the light on the left and the window curtains to the right, whatever had to be right behind me." So she's thinking this being possibly was right behind her, and she has experienced odd things and in the past. So, to me, I just think it's just one of those oddball things that happen, and, you instantly try to make sense of any type of image you see. I mean, it's a natural evolutionary thing that we do as humans, and so there's also I think it's called pareidolia, something like that, and that's when it's a psychological phenomenon when the mind perceives a familiar pattern where none actually exists. Of course, we can all look at this image, not just her, and see that indeed it does look pretty freaky, and it's a very round, large head-looking thing. But what did you think about all that?
So kind of a Jesus on toast thing, alien and video chat.
Yeah. By the way, did you know that sold for, I think it was $20,000 on eBay?
Wow. The toast?
The piece of toast. It's in the museum in Las Vegas.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. Yeah, I think this is that same kind of thing. I mean, that's what the MUFON investigator said in this report, that he felt it was pareidolia as well, because it's just a really poor resolution image, and it's real fuzzy and everything, so that it's just the shapes of the shadow makes it look like it might be an alien. Even you can even see two dark spots in the little eye area.
Right. Yeah.
So.
And they're almond shaped, just like the other depictions.
So interesting. Jesus on toast, or creepy alien creeping up on this girl while she's video chatting.
Yeah.
Photo bomb. Yeah. It's a video bomb.
Hmm. Right.
What if they start doing that?
I didn't realize those things were saved.
The video chats?
Yeah,
no, I think she said she took a screenshot.
Ah, I got it. Okay.
Yeah. So, and who knows? Maybe they were chatting and they're like, "It's so funny. That shadow looks like an alien behind you." And they're like, "Let's screenshot it and send it to MUFON." So that could be what happened. But I guess you never know. But what if that's how aliens decide to start to introduce themselves, by kind of photo bombing us?
Wow. In chat rooms and things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
In our selfies. I mean, we're a selfie nation, right?
That's right.
So that would be interesting. It makes me think. I saw Arrival recently, which was very good. And thinking about this kind of first contact type of scenario, maybe that could be it.
Oh, you did go see that. I am slated to see that tomorrow, actually.
Tomorrow. Cool. Mm-hmm. Hope you like it. Yep. Maybe we'll talk more about it next week or the following week or on your show or at some point in the future.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, although I already gave away the spoiler of the Chihuahua thing on your
That's true. Yeah.
Was it your show or?
It was, yeah. I know it's so confusing.
Maybe I'll spoil my audience too, though. Just how I told Martin, it was she brings in her Chihuahua to meet the aliens and they start barking. It starts barking at the aliens and she's freaking out and she discovers it's the Chihuahua isn't trying to attack the aliens, they're communicating. And that's how Chihuahuas take over the world, kind of like Planet of the Apes. Wow. I added that last part now. Ooh, see, I like my story maybe better. Arrival was good. It's probably going to win all of these awards, but the Chihuahua Planet of the Apes kind of thing might – we might have something there.
I think I see a sequel in this.
Yeah.
Maybe a sequel to it.
So another MUFON debunking actually was this Trump UFO thing. So we had written about this quite a while ago. Which was that, you know, Trump was coming in somewhere, I can't remember, the Iowa State Fair to say hi to people during the campaign. And somebody took a couple pictures and said, oh, there's a UFO following it. But MUFON finally, I guess because that story's popped up again, released their report and wrote about that. Roger Marsh did that via our website at openminds.tv. And they said it's probably just a bird or a bug, which what I think most of us had determined way back when. But, of course, the tabloids being what they are, they're running with it and thinking maybe aliens are chasing Trump or something.
So how did this, like, this story revive itself?
I think it was just one of the tabloids dredged it back up because they had written about it before. You know, when it kind of became a thing. And I think they just, because the timing, just dredged it back up and decided to rerun it. And which, you know, and so it's getting some more play.
So yeah, anytime you put right now, especially now, you put the word Trump and UFO together, I'm sure it's going to get a lot of hits and get a lot of attention.
Yeah, exactly. So... Also, did you watch that video we released on Friday?
No, I have not seen that yet.
Are you at a computer?
Yes.
Yeah, go play it because it's very short while I explain what's going on here.
Alrighty then.
So we have we've got a vast photo archive from Wendell Stevens, this guy who had researched for decades, and people sent him pictures, but he also sought pictures out. Many of these pictures are from the past, so before Photoshop, and some of them are very, very mysterious. So we've shared them on the magazine, the print magazine that we used to do, the Open Minds magazine, but we also have been putting them over the years online in videos, or we write stories about them, or both. So Michael Klein, our video guy, has been putting together some videos of these. And the latest one he posted and put together was of some photographs from Himeji.
Oh, yes, I did watch this.
Japan.
Yes.
Yeah. They're from August of 1976, taken by an 11-year-old kid. He was with some friends when they saw this dark moving object. He captured four color photos, and it was kind of funny. I guess this wasn't the first time they had seen the object. A month prior, they had seen it. But the photos really made it to UFO researchers when the guy at the photo shop was, you know, printing them up, and he saw them, and he said, oh, my gosh, I got to get this to some UFO people. So he contacted a UFO research organization and got them in contact with the kid, so then they were able to kind of investigate the whole thing, and they determined there was no fraud, that this was something these guys had seen. And, you know, if you zoom in on the object, you see this kind of
it's like a dome shape.
Yeah, like a dome on top of a dome type of strange shape. So pretty weird pictures. And again, these are before Photoshop, so pretty interesting. Yeah,
you meant to say at the you said at the Photoshop, but it sounds like it's Photoshop. You meant to say when the film was getting developed. The
yeah, when the film was getting developed at the at a Photoshop, right?
Yeah, right.
Not the program Photoshop.
But it's
before the program Photoshop when they actually had these places called Photoshops. Kids might not know that.
Yeah.
You
did
know?
They really call them that? I didn't know that.
Well, that's why Photoshop is called Photoshop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You're kind of, you learned something new all the time.
I did.
Yeah. Well, you were alive in 1976 when this picture was taken.
I was, yes.
You were already like my age.
Oh, come on now.
No, wow. You weren't that old. I'm just kidding. In fact, I was in diapers when this picture came out.
Yeah.
I remember sitting there in diapers when I got a phone call. Hey, we've got this new UFO photo in Japan. Could you take a look at it? I said, yeah, this is interesting. At that time, I didn't have as much experience with the whole thing, you know, only a few years experience. So I wasn't able to do an in-depth analysis, but they were thankful for my input. And
Well, you were that was back when you were believing all the third phase of the moon videos as well, I think.
Well, that's before their time. This is when I used to analyze pictures by taking them and chewing on them, you know, gumming them up and getting them all soggy. And then handing them back, and then, you know, I would shake like a little – I would tell them my opinion at that point. So,
hey, everyone's got to start somewhere. So.
Yeah. Mm. So, all right. Well, is there any more news you wanted to talk about?
No, that's it for me here.
Okay. Good. Well, thank you so much for joining us again. I hope you're able to keep warm and keep your computer warm because I know,
That's right.
We had some computer issues coming in because of possibly its coldness and
studio's too cold. Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Oh my gosh, that would be. I mean, I rarely have to. When we go camping, I'll wear a coat, but that's about it. So. And it's nice. I like being warm. But hey, thank you so much for coming on the show again. You and have a great holiday, by the way. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there.
And I doubt I'll be able to put together a show because I'm going to have all this family in town and this craziness going on. So I'm sure I'll talk to you on your show. Otherwise, as far as open minds, it'll be a couple weeks.
All right.
All right. So you have a good one. Talk to you soon. Let's go ahead and talk to Ryan Sprague or Sprague. I am very excited to welcome back to the show Ryan Sprague. Hello.
Hey, Alejandro. It's been a while, man.
Mm-hmm. Or as I like to say, and I hope you don't take offense, I like to say Sprague sometimes.
I have had so many nicknames throughout my childhood, being an athlete growing up and whatnot. So I love it. You know, give me what you got. I'll take it.
And it is a total compliment because it makes me think of ragu, and I love ragu, and it makes me hungry for Italian and spaghetti. So it's a very pleasant feeling I have when I think of that the name that
I'm
way.
I'm with you. Mm-hmm. Italian's my favorite food, so I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, and you're in a great place for it, living in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm here in New York City. I'm currently resided in Queens, but I did do the whole Manhattanite lifestyle when I first moved here. But I moved out to the quote unquote borough burbs at this point to just get a little bit more quiet, you know, some peace and quiet while I ruminate on UFOs and whatnot. So, yeah, man, I'm going on 10 years here, so I'm a official New Yorker, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and for those of us that, you know, live out here in suburbia and the rest of the world, I mean, Queens is still New York, you know. It's still city to us.
Oh, yeah. Even when I have people come visit and I tell them, this is the quiet area, they're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I grew up in small town Syracuse, New York, so I definitely know what it's like to live in the suburbs for sure. But I would give anything to be out there in Arizona right now, trust me.
Well, you'll be here soon enough because the UFO Congress is just a few months away, and you will be one of our exciting speakers.
Yes, I am so excited. It'll be my first conference ever, so what an honor. I you know, immediately when you asked me, I said yes without even thinking about it, and I'm putting my talk together every day, and I'm really looking forward to bringing some new stuff to the table for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you you know, had announced you were writing this book, or you were in the process, I think, at our last conference or while that was happening, but I thought, you know, oh man, I had been thinking it would be so cool if we could be the first people or the first conference that Ryan speaks at. And I thought it's probably just not going to happen. I mean, because there's so long to go. Everybody's going to, and you know, and I get surprised people haven't had you speak at their conferences before. And it looks like we're going to make it. I think we'll make it. We will be the first, and that's going to be awesome because I have no doubt, you know, you're definitely well-loved in this field already, even though you haven't spoken at conferences. And I just have every faith that people are going to love your information. They always do. So we also feel honored. We're super happy that, you know, it's really cool that we'll be the first venue for one of your talks, one of many, many, many to come, I'm sure.
I hope so, man. I think it's all about getting new material out there and a fresh perspective. And I think that's what the quote-unquote younger guard is really trying to do. I mean, I'm 32 years old and I'm considered young in this field. And yeah. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's right. But when I come to your conference, for your listeners who don't know, I volunteer every year. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to come last year, but I love coming out there and, you know, whatever I have to do, tape down cords, do the sound, do the lights. I love what you guys do, and you're bringing the most credibility to this field that we could possibly ask for. And I noticed that immediately, and I wanted to be a part of it. And that's what I try to do with the book, and hopefully what I can do for the people who come to the conference for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This time you won't be backstage because you'll be at your table too, selling your book so people can come talk to you and buy the books, which is a lot of fun, but it's going to be great to have you back. We definitely missed you last year.
I missed you guys too.
So the book, yeah, and bringing this new perspective, what approach did you take? The book is called Somewhere in the Skies. It was just released. It was published by Richard Dolan Press. So Richard Dolan, and you might not even know this yet, so this is probably news to you. I just posted essentially our rough draft of the schedule. Hopefully it'll stick, but you never know what happens. So I've got you speaking right before Richard Dolan on Saturday morning.
Oh man, that is that's a lot to live up to for sure. That's like being the opening band for U2 or something.
Well, at least we have you before and not after, which might be more daunting.
Exactly. I wouldn't be able to live up to that. No, don't. Richard's amazing. I couldn't have asked for a better publisher and someone to sort of take me under his wing, show me how it's done. And he's one of my biggest inspirations. That's for darn sure. And that's exciting. Yeah, that's the first I heard about it. So wow, I gotta get moving on this, making everything I can.
So when you decided to write a book, I mean, was it at someone's request or had you already thought about it?
Well, I've been writing articles for you guys for a while. Mm-hmm. A couple other magazines out there as well. And it's limited when you're writing articles. Your job as a journalist is to be objective, to do it concise, and you're limited to word counts and whatnot. But I really wanted to give my own opinion and be able to sort of elaborate on those things I was writing about. And that's when I contacted Rich and I said, hey, man, I want to write a book for you. And he said, awesome. What about? And honestly, Alejandro, I had no idea what my sort of my theme
UFOs.
Yeah, that's literally what I said to the man. I was like, UFOs. He's like, yeah, great. So does everybody. What about them? And that's really when I had to sit down as the sort of naive researcher that I was at the time and think, What can I do? How can I benefit the field and the study and bring to the table something new that people will actually not just want to read, but think about? And that's when he and I sort of narrowed in on this idea that let's focus on the individuals, those who've witnessed UFOs, those who've possibly had contact and or an abduction experience with the possible occupants of said UFOs. So that's what I did. The subtitle is A Human Approach to an Alien Phenomenon, and that's really what I focused on, is how did the event affect these people's lives afterwards? And while I cover the event itself, it's not the focal point of the book. It is the implication to the event. How did it change their lives, religiously, socially, economically, sexually, psychologically? Everything you can think of can be tied to this singular event, and I really wanted to explore that. So I interviewed, over a span of 2 years, about 200 people. I narrowed it down to a couple dozen, and that's what I focused on in the book. I followed them through the event and talked to their family members, you know, people in their community, and how it changed them and how their outlook changed after the event and how it propels them forward.
Mm-hmm. Were these all people who believed they had then some sort of contact?
Not necessarily. The first sort of quarter of the book chronicles people who've had UFO sightings. Something so what many consider mundane, just lights in the sky, or possible triangular craft, or quote unquote flying saucers. So while they don't necessarily believe they were in contact with any sort of ET intelligence, what they saw conveyed something otherworldly, something they could not explain. So the first, like I said, quarter of the book follows those people and how those events changed maybe their beliefs. I've got a couple pilots who I interview. I've got a whole chapter on military witnesses and, you know, how that changed their outlook on everything they once perceived and their mindset moving forward. And then I gradually work up to possible contact and then abduction experiences. So there's definitely a three-part structure to the book.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me just how impactful sightings, which many consider mundane, are to people. Even lights in the sky doing weird stuff they shouldn't be can really have a strong effect. I mean, did you find that with some of the people you talked to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I spoke to one guy in South Carolina who saw these orange orbs, which I know you've covered on previous episodes with certain researchers and whatnot. And while these can sometimes be attributed to weather anomalies or condensed energies, you know, ball lightning we sometimes refer to, there are just no explanation for some of these things. And this gentleman in South Carolina witnessed this with other people around, was able to videotape it, sent it off to MUFON, sent it off to the FAA, the nearby Air Force Base. Nobody recorded anything in the skies that night. So whatever he saw was not a conventional and or commercial flight. Apparently, it was not military. But this changed this man's life, Alejandro. He was a pretty stand-up guy, pretty laid-back beforehand, very salt-of-the-earth, everything. And after this event, he felt like something was sort of unlocked in his mind, and he became an artist. You know, he started seeing patterns within his own perception of a blank slate in front of him, whether it was, you know, white paper. He would just start drawing and making these elaborate patterns, and he was creating. And that was a passion he never really had before the event. It was driving him to do something, to become an artist, to find an outlet of sorts for what he had seen and try to convey that in artistic ways. So that's just one of many that I found. But a lot of people, yeah, it completely changed their concept of conventional aircraft, first of all, and their perception of reality thereafter.
But I think that's fascinating. It's so fascinating that someone's life can completely change by an event, any event, let alone an event like this. And regardless of what it was he actually experienced, and some he may never know, but it can change your life so much. So some of these people, you even spoke to friends and family or people around them who I'm assuming also recognize this change in these people.
Absolutely. You know, from the day after the event. Some of these people, it was gradual, but for some, it was immediate. And you can't argue with something like that. These could even be attributed to a traumatic event in someone's life. Say you're in a car accident and you never walk again, as tragic as that is. That's going to change the way you live the rest of your life, both physically, emotionally, and psychologically. So a lot of these UFO events could be considered a traumatic event, and that can often unlock things in your brain. I've talked to Greg Bishop a lot lately about this idea of trauma unlocking things and opening up your awareness. There have been people who have reported being able to speak an entire language after having a traumatic event that they'd never spoken before or learned or remembered having learned. So a lot of this has to do with the mind, and that's kind of where I'm heading in my research, is this whole cerebral aspect to the UFO phenomenon. You know, not getting too metaphysical or in the consciousness realm, but there is something to it, and something that I think happens to each and every one of these people, like we said, from simple lights in the sky all the way up to possible abductions.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's what's a fascinating aspect of the whole thing, is that it's more than just lights in the sky or even if these things are mundane, the effects or some of these events are, the effects that they have on people and their perceptions are really important, especially when you're dealing with such a large percent of the population that is being affected somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the other thing. The percentage of people having the experiences is much higher than we think. A lot of people think UFOs are on the downfall, as it were. You know, that ufology is coinciding with the lack of reports being made. I don't necessarily see that true. You can take this book, for instance. A lot of events I cover were pretty darn recent, to be honest, dating all the way up to like last year. Mm-hmm. I've got a few that go pretty far back, but these things are still happening, and they're happening all over the world. This isn't just a Western phenomenon, and we know that. We have reports from all over of these things happening, and it does affect the family dynamic or a community dynamic as well when these things are reported. If you have one of these quote-unquote abductees in your town, entire town is looked at differently. You know, look at stuff like Allegash or Snowflake, Arizona. That town is now known by that face, whether it's Travis Walton or what have you. This affects everything. Absolutely everything, whether it is a hoax or not. It's fascinating. It's a big sociological study for sure, and one I try to tap into in the book and in my further research.
Mm-hmm. I always think of, you know, I keep thinking right now of that scene in Close Encounters where Truffaut, or the French guy modeled after Jacques Vallée, is yep, talking to the military, and he is so trying to get his point across that I think it's the only moment he actually speaks English, and he says, "This is an event sociological." Remember that? Do you remember that part?
I do.
Yeah, oh, where he's trying to get this across. But that's why, you know, I guess my next question leading up to what I'm getting at, I guess, is do you have photos in your book, like UFO photos?
No photos in the book. When I first sat down to write it, I wanted to have a photo of each individual in the book. First of all,
cool.
Everyone uses their real names in the book. There are no pseudonyms. Mm. I made that clear from the start. Like, you know, if you're going to come forward with the event, I want you to know that I want your face front and center. This book is about you, not the phenomenon and not me. This is about you. So I told them, I want your real name. If you're not okay with that, I'm sorry. I got to move on to somebody else. And that might seem a little, you know, rude at first, but again, we're trying to get the most credible cases out there to make this field of study both digestible and relatable. And I thought having their faces front and center would do that. That would have taken a lot of legal things and whatnot to do. So I decided not to put photos in the book. But I do go on to describe, you know, what I thought of these people when I first met them face to face, or when I first called them on the phone, you know, what their voice was like, how their, you know, a husband grabbed the hand of the wife who had the experience and how she was trembling. I think small things like that really help in that aspect. And we've mentioned before, my passion here in New York is I'm a playwright. I focus on characters, and that's kind of what I took into this book, is to focus on that person, what makes them who they are, and how this event changed who they are.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I asked you the question is that I figured, you know, that would be your answer, at least that you didn't have UFO photos. Because I agree with you that these stories are really the heart of the content of the phenomena. Because, you know, we get a lot of people when we post a story saying, where's the photo? Where's the video? And it's like, you know, who cares if there's a photo or video? Most of the time, the photo or video is poor. It doesn't really help the case very much. And even regardless of whether there is a photo or video, it hinges on the content of what the witness has to say. So that's really kind of the meat of the story. I think it's just that maybe it's people are so lazy, you know, they don't want to read is some of it. But just kind of agreeing with you that the content, those little details you're talking about, are what's important. And for people who have an experience, that's really what they are fascinated by when it comes to other people's experiences as well, it seems.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I do see both sides of it, Alejandro. I fall victim to that a lot of, you know, prove it to me. Show me photographic evidence. And that, unfortunately, that's the only sort of things that are going to get the scientific community interested in this. Can we have evidence, irrefutable evidence or repeatability to study, you know? Most of the time, these UFOs are gone in the blink of an eye. So what is there to analyze? Nothing. So a lot of the time, all we have to rest on is the story. And that's a big struggle for some people. I don't expect everyone to believe every story I tell in the book. Do I believe every story? Yes, absolutely. These are the most genuine people I could find out there, and that have had some of the most extraordinary experiences. Now, whether or not it is quote unquote alien in terms of ET, that's a completely different story. The alien in my subtitle is more of a, you know, this was foreign to this human being. This event was not something they were used to by any conventional terms. So again, yes, for those who argue that a story is not enough, I would have to argue and say a lot of the times it's all we have.
Mm-hmm. And I fall back on, you know, I start to think of, well, what are the best cases out there? And the best cases out there that I feel are the best cases don't have photos or videos. So, for example, Rendlesham, which, of course, you're very familiar with. I think that's what we talked about last time you were on, where you were working on the play for that. But yep. There's really no photos of a craft or video of a craft there. Same with, let's say, Travis Walton, who you mentioned earlier, or Phoenix Lights has maybe a couple of very controversial videos, but the heart of that case is in all of these is the number of witnesses, the credibility of the witnesses, and the content of what they have to say.
Yes, absolutely. And you talk to some of the family members of these people and you say, well, do you believe them? And they all say, I believe that they believe this happened. And that's a very convoluted way of saying it. But again, that's what we have. And you just mentioned three of the top cases, arguably, in ufology. And none of them have photographic evidence or anything to really back them up. We just have very genuine people who we can only trust are telling us the truth. And sometimes that's enough for me.
Now, you mentioned something really important, and I think with your book as well, that you went with people who weren't afraid to share their name. And I think this is what's really interesting is about your book, is there are a lot of people, witnesses, let's say, you know, such as these stories that we post on a daily basis of people seeing things or experiencing things. But it's more rare for the person to be bold enough to share that experience with friends and family. And often those people who do, it's because it's been so impactful, they just kind of can't contain it. So that's what I think adds to make the cases that you cover even more interesting. And I guess I was wondering if you could share with an example of an individual maybe you can think of whose surroundings, maybe family and or community, were very affected by the experience.
Yeah, definitely. There's one story that I can think of in the book about a gentleman named Scott. He's a retired radio airman. He was in the first class for the Coast Guard. And he had a really dramatic UFO sighting back in 1974 in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, where he was at a drive-in with a friend late at night. Not late at night. This was just at dusk. And they're in their car, you know, hoping to maybe score a chick or something that night. And they're about to start the movie, and this chevron-shaped craft starts floating over the movie screen and over the entire parking lot. So it's terrifying. You know, at this point, everyone is starting to get out of their cars, and they're staring up at this thing. Some people start freaking out, and they get out of their cars to leave, but nobody's cars would start. So at this point, it's directly above them, and Scott remembers feeling like time sort of slowed down. Everything became hazy, the air became thick, this sort of fishbowl feeling that we hear about with some UFO sightings. But the weirdest thing about it, Alejandro, Scott goes to use the restroom after this chevron-shaped craft floats away, and nobody in the whole drive-thru is talking about what just happened. They're all just dazed, and they continue to just wait in line for the restroom or go back to their cars, which I might add restarted once this thing was out of the area. And Scott couldn't remember anything that just happened. So he and his friend, they finish the movie and they go home. It wasn't until many years later when he saw a book on UFOs that it was sort of a trigger, and all the memories started to flood back in of this event. So what Scott did is he furiously looked for people who were there that night in his hometown who had also witnessed this. He was able to find a couple people, but nobody wanted to talk about it. He also tried to cooperate it with his friend who was there that night and hasn't had any luck finding this guy. So what you have here is a case where this was a mass sighting, unquestionably. But everyone denied it, or they had some sort of instant amnesia to the event having happened. So this is kind of the story of a town struggling with accepting that this happened, and we only have Scott to rely on that this actually happened. And that's a lot of weight on one man's shoulders when such a dramatic event occurred and no one's really talking about it. So that's just one of many that I could find where a mass sighting is kind of resting on the shoulders of one witness.
Mm-hmm. Have there also been situations which, you know, an individual, maybe who's influential in their community or with their family, just because of title or because, you know, their characters, some people are kind of larger than life type of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so impacted by their event that they kind of brought it to everyone and everyone kind of, I guess, how did they deal?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a tough one. I can't say that I really found anyone of, you know, such prominence that it completely changed the structure of their town or anything like that. I do cover a story about a man who had a very interesting and almost spiritual experience with an abduction. Afterwards, he left the town he lived in, which was here in New York City, and he moved away and became the pastor of a church and started talking about his events and how he related this to an angelic presence almost. So right there you have a direct experience influencing a man and his congregation, as it were, if we were to get a little more on the religious side of all this.
That's so super interesting.
Yeah, very much so, that this one man's experience he took as a religious one, mm-hmm. and imparted that onto the people who were willing to listen to him.
Mm-hmm. Now, with him, how did you find him? I mean, does he believe it was spiritual but also extraterrestrial?
Yes, yes. He again, we can sort of connect UFOs and the abduction phenomenon to so many different things. Science, religion, theology, everything. And this is what this man chose. While he does believe that this was ET in origin, he also believes that the greater power, whatever that may be, is also the creator of these ETs. I remember when I was, oh gosh, very young, and I went to confession at my Catholic church, and I asked my priest straight up, hey man, like, UFOs, what do you got for me? Do you believe in them? What does the church believe? I really put the Inquisition on him. And he told me, he said, yeah, I believe there is possibly life out there, and it just shows how great God's power actually is. You know, and I don't want to get too much into religion, but that is a very big facet of this phenomenon. A lot of people see it that way. And a lot of people use prayer to try to fight it off as well, mm-hmm. for those who may think this is demonic or evil in some way. You can't fault anyone for feeling that way when their lives have been intruded upon so vigorously. So,
right.
Yeah.
So that's funny, because that's going to be my talk at the conference. It's going to be about UFOs and religion, their impact on religion, the idea of aliens, and then, religions that have spawned from it. But I was inspired by someone who did something similar to what you're talking about. Although it was a ghost thing. So he wrote a book, and I interviewed him about it, about something like, why is a good Catholic boy believe in ghosts or something like that. But that was his thing, is that I think it was his mom who saw the ghost or at first, and then he felt his house was haunted. And he's a publisher in New York there for a big publishing company. And he thought, am I even, when this started happening, he's like, but I'm Roman Catholic. Am I supposed to believe in ghosts? So he did the same thing. He went to the church and he's like, am I supposed to believe in this? And he was shocked to find that they were like, well, you can believe in it. And we even have, parts in the Bible that talk about it and other research. So, mm-hmm. so he shared his whole experience that way. And that's where I was headed was, because I think a lot of people feel like that with religion is, am I supposed to believe in aliens or whatever? And that was kind of the angle I took for when I built this whole presentation.
That's fascinating. I can't wait to hear that, man, because a lot of outsiders view ufology as a religion. And that's tough, We can't really deny that at times, but at the same time, that's why there are people out there willing to look at all angles, scientifically, theologically, theoretically, And religiously, it's such a broad spectrum, and that's, first of all, you know, I can't plug the Congress enough. You bring every angle to the table, and then it's left for the audience to decide and what they do with that information afterwards. When we get down to it, it's about starting conversations. It's not about bickering, arguing one person's point over another. We don't have time for that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, we're at, especially here in America, we're at some interesting times, you know, whether politically, environmentally, we're at some very interesting times in this world, and we gotta keep looking forward. And if UFOs have anything to do with that, let's put that mirror up to ourselves and really ask the big questions.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of brings up your talk at the Congress, because you're going to be tackling that topic at the Congress. So I guess maybe explain what your talk is going to be about.
Yeah, sure. I'm really going out on a limb with this one. And for my first talk, I'm wondering if I'm being a bit too ambitious, but I guess that'll be up for you and the audience to decide. But what I want to focus on is the talk is called UFOs versus Ufology, the Convergence of Experience and Study. So we have those, like in the book, who have come forward with their experience. And then we have the other side of it, the study of ufology, which many consider a scientific study. And they can't rely on these witnesses' stories to prove anything. So right there, you have that line in the sand of, if we want the scientific community and the mainstream to take this topic seriously, what can we give them? How can we get scientists involved in this? And even in the book, Alejandro, I interview many scientists. I interviewed, let's see, a astrophysicist, an astrobiologist, psychologists. They're all in there, man, and they're all willing to talk about it and hear me out, that the witness and the experiencer have to be the backbone to the scientific data, to the analysis. So that's kind of what I want to do in the talk, is look at both sides of the spectrum and find that middle ground and how we can come together and make ufology sort of a unified field. I really feel like that's what's holding us back. We have too many people arguing that one side of it is not more important than the other. And I think there's many arguments to dissuade that. So let's have a conversation about it. I'm not there to preach to anyone about it. I want to hear people's thoughts. You know, if there's a Q&A at the end of the talk, I want to ask questions of the audience. That's what I want to do there, man. I want to open up the dialogue, and I want to get fresh perspectives on it. I want to hear from the younger people. You know, getting back into politics, let's hear from the younger people who have voices that get put down so often. Because I guarantee you, the younger people out there have a lot to say, and that could make some big ripple effects in the field.
Mm-hmm. What is your perspective, being you were laughing earlier about how you're considered a younger person in this field and you're 32. I mean, there's that whole saying, what was it, don't trust anybody over 30?
Yeah.
What do you think the younger people are looking for? What do you think, you know, when it comes to this, I guess, field of study?
It's tough, man, because the younger people now have lived on nothing but the internet. I mean, you and I can remember life before the internet, and how we gathered our research before that. It was in libraries. It was over the phone. It was waiting 2 freaking weeks for a letter to arrive, you know? There is so much instant access to UFO content now over the internet that where do you even begin? How do you separate the hoaxes from the possible authentic cases? It's endless. It's such a cesspool when it comes to the internet. So what I think we got to do, and what I think as a person on the younger side of it, is hear them out. What do they think? aliens are? What do they think they represent? And that's separate from UFOs. Again, we always tie these two together so often that immediately UFOs are alien. We don't know that. We do not know that in every case. So what do they think UFOs are? What do they think the most interesting cases are? Where are they finding their content? And then how can we guide them into what we feel is the most positive and beneficial way to look at this phenomenon? And we have to start looking at it other than a nuts and bolts field. You know, in so many years, we haven't been able to grab a flying saucer and analyze it, at least that the public knows of. We could do a whole show on that, obviously. But yeah, man, let's hear from the younger people. Let's get them interested. We've got people like Tom DeLonge out there. Love him or hate him. He is getting younger people interested. And that's contentious with the information he's bringing forward. It could be nothing but disinformation. But again, he's getting people interested in the topic. And if that's what we could take from what he's bringing forward, kudos to him. That's all I have to say. Again, love him or hate him.
Right, right. And I agree. I mean, I applaud his effort. I mean, he's putting in a work and effort, and you know, maybe he's starting from the beginning, but so does everybody. But he's really in there trying hard, and I think that's great personally.
Yep. And again, you know, only time will tell what information he really has, but when it comes down to it, let's take whatever we can get and then work from there.
Mm-hmm. And you know, his journey of discovery will be also a journey of discovery for those who do follow him. And so at least everyone will be learning along with him, even if they don't bring this field any further along. But then again, he may. But even if he doesn't, at least he's bringing others into on that journey with him.
Yeah, man, it's amazing how much this parallels, you know, politics in America right now, doesn't it?
yeah, the whole
thing.
It
really is about, it's a learning process, you know, and we all just got to work together. And I see that nowhere greater than in the field of ufology. We are a team, and there are those little sandboxes of people arguing, but when it comes down to it, all of us want our answers, and we've been looking at this our whole lives. It takes up so much of our time, and it's because we believe that there is a core mystery to this to be solved, and that's what keeps me going, man.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that people like you, or I think that what's great about a lot of the people I respect mostly in the field are ones who can focus on what they do, but appreciate what others do as well, as opposed to, like you're saying, those who focus on what they do and they're upset at everybody else because everybody isn't doing it the way they do it, which they think is the only and the right way to do it. But the world is more colorful and broad, and there's more discovery when we all appreciate our different perspectives.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't put it better myself. My inspirations are the old guard of ufology, Stanton Friedman, Peter Robbins. They probably don't want me to say they're old guard, but come on, man. I mean, the grandfather of ufology. I have nothing but the utmost respect for him, and he's still pumping out new content. And that's where I got my knowledge from. And now I need to take that and run with it. It's like basketball. You get that pass, and then you have to decide what to do from there.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? And listening to younger people, too, I think that's a big deal. It's funny you said that because my cousin, Jason, I think you've met him.
I believe so.
Yeah, because he also volunteered at our first one, as did you. But he started up a college group. And it was sort of an experiment. This was in Colorado, and MUFON was headquartered there. And, you know, they also had the concern of how do we get younger people involved. And he, after a year of having this club and trying different things, he found out they want to be listened to. they want to have discussion and they want to talk and ask questions. And it was kind of funny because it was brought to certain people and they were like, because they really wanted to know what they wanted. And they were like, oh, we can't do that. I mean, they don't know anything. They need to sit and listen to us because we're the ones who have the decades of research and we're the ones who know something. And it's like, well, you know, that's – there's on. Your problem.
There's the problem right there. Yeah. You're right,
and
man.
And there's a way to impart information in discussion.
Yep. Absolutely. I think you guys do a good job of that with your panels at your conference is, you know, you'll have Stan Friedman sitting next to a Jeremy Corbell, and they'll have a discussion. It could get heated, but come on. That's where the real passion comes out, you know. Mm-hmm. But there you go. You've got decades between these two in age, and all they're trying to do is come to an agreement on what we have to do to get those answers. And that's invigorating to me. And you're right. Younger people want nothing more than to be heard. And yes, they have a lot to say outside the UFO field as well. And we have to – we just got to listen, man. All of us.
No and it's interesting. It's interesting, you know, people – you know, they're online so much more. And I guess they're doing a lot of discussion there. But that human interaction seems to be a bit of what they crave.
Yes. I mean, I've had arguments over text messages. I can't tell you how many times until that person says to me, you know what? Let's go grab coffee. And then again, it's being in the room with that person. So much gets lost over these stupid screens in front of us or over even phone calls. That face-to-face interaction is where it really happens, and I think that's why conferences need to continue, and we need to be in the room with one another, because you're going to get impulsive reactions and answers that you won't get over the internet, which is so heavily edited and so heavily biased in so many ways. We got to keep that face-to-face interaction going, and that is the human side of all this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when you were talking about your book and your approach to the book at the beginning of the show, it reminded me so much of being a field investigator. And, you know, I think that's why I have a passion for these individual stories as well, like your book is focusing on. Because when you are face to face with a witness who experienced something they can't explain, and they're expressing to you the impact it had on them, even though, you know, the 1,000-word story on, you know, our website might be boring to you, the experience of talking to these individuals is so rich and so fascinating that, you know, it even sticks with you. Those interviews I used to do, those are what really have stuck with me throughout the years.
I can only imagine. I'm envious to say the least. I've always
wanted
to be a
field you've done the same thing, though. I mean, that's what you're doing with your book, your research. You're doing the same thing.
Oh, totally, man. And I can readily admit, like, the catalyst for the book was one woman's story when I met her at your Congress. I sat with her at the diner, at the casino, and she was crying her eyes out next to her husband, holding his hand, gripping it so tight, trying to tell me the story.
Wow.
And had she sent me an email about it, I would have been like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, maybe we'll get to it. But being in that room with her and feeling her like knee tap the table from underneath, she was so nervous and so much balled up energy and adrenaline recalling the story. That is what spoke to me, and that's what made me decide to write the book and to focus on the individuals. Because you're right, there is nothing like being in the room with that person. And it could completely change your whole outlook on the UFO phenomenon in general. I could hear a million stories, see them in a newspaper. That's not going to convince me of anything. The people having the experiences are the things that are going to convince me.
Mm-hmm. So that's really exciting. How long has your book been out now?
Almost 2 weeks now.
Uh-huh. It hasn't been very long. And the best place, I mean, they can get it on Amazon, or I guess you could go to Richard Dolan Press. And then you have a website, too, somewhereintheskies.com.
Yes, yeah, that's where you can find all my work. I still post articles there and my own thoughts on the field and some articles as well.
And what else are you doing? I mean, you're pretty busy out there. You're doing podcast or podcasts. You're writing for a website, or I should say, websites. Like, where can people find your stuff?
Yeah,
List them all.
I sure, fine. Let's go down. Your listeners are going to get sick of my portfolio. I write for the Paranormal Brain Trust over at jimherald.com, with the likes of Marie D. Jones and Micah Hanks and Nick Redfern. That's a lot of fun. That's where I get to stretch my muscles, go a little outside the UFO field. I talk about my last one was about secret Soviet psychic spies. So that's a lot of fun. I do have two podcasts. One is called UFO Mod Pod, which is a fresh look at the UFO phenomenon. And that's with Jason McClellan and Maureen Ellsbury, your two good buds. And I have another podcast called Into the Fray. And again, that's sort of diving out of my comfort zone and covering cryptids, ghosts, paranormal. And that's with Shannon LeGros and Sam Sheeran. And other than that, man, you could find me now on Mysteries at the Museum on the Travel Channel. I'm a reoccurring person on there talking about UFO cases. Just filmed another episode there about the Robert Salas case. So look for that in the very near future. God, one of the best UFO cases out there for sure. So
That's good.
busy, busy,
Yes,
busy, busy.
super busy. And that doesn't include you having a regular job and working as a playwright. I know you've written some plays that have made it to the stage. Are there still, plays? Are some of your plays still showing? And do you do more than just write them? Do you participate in other ways in the stage work?
The plays are always an ongoing thing, whether it's, it's through developing them or having them actually up there on the stage. I do have a production coming up in February. It's a horror thriller play I wrote about
Ooh.
a modern day Jack the Ripper. So yeah, that's going to be a fun one. That'll be premiering in February here in New York City, in the dead of winter. And other than that, I just came out with my first feature film based on one of my plays. So I'm getting more into the film world, and that just opens up the doors to a lot of other stuff, you get to expand the universe of the play, and show it, instead of telling it. So that's really exciting. I've got a lot of that stuff. My playwriting and movies can be found at my other website, ryandsprague.com. And yeah, man, anything I can do to keep busy. And I'm starting to mix my passions, like you said. I've got a play about the Rendlesham case. I'm working on another play about Disclosure. That'll be a dark comedy because I don't
Oh,
see it happening
cool.
any other way.
Yeah.
So again, man, just getting the UFO topic out to people who wouldn't necessarily ever think about it, and that's, a play audience, a theater audience, and to those who've never really looked up in the sky. There's a lot going on up there, and I just want to do my part to try to show them that.
What is the name of that feature film?
That film is called Reverie Lane. Right now it's making the festival circuit, but it will be available in digital format very soon. And again, you can find out more on that at ryandsprague.com.
Wow. So, and that you've also got a girlfriend, which of course that takes up time. You're very in love. You share that, on your Facebook. No, that's wonderful. 'Cause I like to share that as much as I can also.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, she puts up with me, God bless her, with all the UFO stuff. But she's really into it. She edited my book, actually.
Oh, cool.
I do have to give her kudos to that. She made me actually sound like I'm a decent writer, and that's all I could ask. But not only that, she's passionate about the material, and she herself is really into it. So you'll be meeting her in February, and everyone else,
Awesome.
you'll finally get to meet the face of the person I'm always fawning over.
Yeah, well, excited for that. Well, that's so cool. I don't know how you can do all of that and stay so busy. You must definitely have the heart and soul of a young person. But is it maybe that your homes are so small in New York, or you've got to share them with other people, that you just want to kind of be out and about, keeping busy as much as possible?
If I can do something that's going to get me out of this godforsaken city, even for a week, like Arizona, I am all for it. And yeah, a lot of these opportunities have brought me to places all over the country, possibly the world. And it's exciting, man. And I can tell you one other thing. Coffee works wonders.
I hear you on that. All right. Well, we are totally out of time. Thank you so much for coming on again. It was so fun to talk to you. The time flew, of course, and I am looking so forward to not just hanging out with you again at the Congress, but actually sharing and being able to, you know, be a part of you sharing your information with everyone. I know they're going to love it, and we're going to have a wonderful time.
I'm excited, man. I've been a huge fan of everything you've done since your first podcast. And I can't thank you enough for the opportunity. So I'll see you in February.
Yep, our pleasure. We'll see you soon.
All right.
Thank you so much to Ryan for coming on the show again. I'm so happy for him and his book. It looks like people are really enjoying it. You know, if you go to his Facebook, it's kind of cool. A lot of people are taking pictures, selfies with themselves in the book and posting those, and he's reposting those. So they're a lot of fun. Go check out Ryan on Facebook. You can also find him on the website we talked about, Somewhere in the Skies, and that's where you'll find out more about the book and how to get the book. So a lot of cool information at that website. Again, that's just somewhereintheskies.com. And otherwise, like he said, I mean, on his Facebook and then also on his personal website, you can get more about his plays and everything. So just a busy fellow, which is so cool. That's awesome that he keeps so busy and he's able to, you know, continue to do stuff all around the board. So just a busy, you know, in New York, they're those people do a lot of stuff. They're busy people. They're always here, hither and nither, here to and fro, running around. They're crazy. They're nutty, those New York people. But I love it. New York's awesome. That's it for today's show, and the holidays are coming up. Like we talked about with Martin, Thanksgiving's coming up, so I hope you guys have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We probably will miss next week as far as shows go. I'm sorry. I know everybody's like, where's the show? Where's the show? Well, you just have to wait another week. However, I'm sure there's some archives you can catch on. Like, did you hear our first interview with Ryan Sprague? Did you listen to our interview with Jacques Vallée? Huh? He's really cool. In fact, he's got we just posted this in the news today, a Q&A about UFOs for the Oxford University Press. Huh? That's pretty impressive. So someone at Oxford, an author, you know, interviewed him, and they posted that on their website. So you can check that out after you listen to the podcast that we did with Jacques Vallée for Open Minds. So go check that out. There's lots of archives, tons and tons of archives. We've got over 5 million listens. So there's just, and a lot of that is not just from the thousands and thousands of people who listen to the show every week, but also from people listening to archives. I hear so much that from people who will just kind of start at the beginning and listen. And I wonder, you know, that makes me think of how I used to be compared to how I am now. I mean, was I a complete idiot at the beginning? Probably. Am I a complete idiot now? Some think so. But regardless, thank you all so much for listening. You know, we've got new information on the website about the UFO Congress, so check that out. People are registering like crazy, which is really good because we have lots of really cool stuff. And we're going to have a lot of what I haven't posted is the Phoenix Lights oriented stuff we're going to have. It's the 20th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights, and of course the conference is just outside of Phoenix in the Phoenix area, so it makes sense that we celebrate that phenomena at our conference, and we will, and we're going to have some special events surrounding that. That's the only thing we haven't announced. Otherwise, you can see all of the other incredible speakers there. I talked about Erica Lukes. A lot of people saw her recently, and they really loved her talk, so you got to come and check that out. Otherwise, we've got lots of really great stuff, new talks, and that's what's fun. If you see listed on the website researchers you've seen before, most likely this talk that they're going to do at our conference is going to be something new and different, because we keep up with what people are doing, you know, or what they have done in the past, the actual details of their research or work. And so I've been able to communicate with them to talk about what is something new and different that you can discuss at our conference. And these people that we've brought are doing new and different things. They're continuing their research, and they're going to share the latest and greatest. And you can read about what they're going to be talking about at theufocongress.com. Other than that, you know, thank you all again for being here. Thank you to Caleb Hanks for the opening and close music. And I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Adios, muchachos.
This is